Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. We're rolling along. Jeff's actually going to see some Cape games today and tomorrow, I believe. I think I'm going to stay nicely, firmly planted at home, watch Chase Burns tonight. We're recording this. I know you're listening or watching this on Wednesday, but we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. So I'm going to watch Chase Burns tonight. And then as you're watching this, a public service announcement, if you're not planning to watch Pirates Brewers on Wednesday day game, please do. If you're listening to this podcast and you find this interesting, I don't know how a Paul Skeens versus Jacob Mizorowski matchup would not be something that fits within the Venn diagram of interested in the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, Prospect Podcast, and not interested in Mizorowski versus Skeens. I don't know how that would, I don't know how there's not a complete overlap that those are two circles on top of each other, but that's coming tomorrow as we record this today, as you listen to this. And that's just fun because that's what we wanted to start with. We're going to start a series today. We are, over the next 6 podcasts, we are going to take one division a day or week, I should say, one division a week, where we go through and look at all 5 teams in that division and kind of do a mid-season prospect update. We're going to kind of what's going well, what's not going so well, look at it, a prospect or two who's kind of taken a jump. For each organization, for all 30 orgs. So whatever team you're a fan of, in the next 6 weeks, we will have you covered. We're starting with the AL East. I'm sorry, West fans, but we're going to go East, Centrals, West, as we often do. But your time is coming. But before we do that, like I said, we got Chase Burns making his MLB debut. You will already have that in your back rearview mirror by the time you're listening to this, but we do not as we record this. But I would say bigger picture on this. We talked, Jeff, about kind of coming into the year, how this could be kind of one of those years of the pitcher. I would say that our top 100 now of guys in the minors is much more kind of now we are in, it's a great place to be, the year of the young shortstop prospects, which is a great place to be. But we've already seen multiple starting pitchers kind of make that jump from the top 100 to the big leagues. Most notably last week, Jacob Mizorowski has now made 2 starts. He's allowed 1 hit. He carried a no-hitter into the 11th inning of his work. He carried a perfect game into the 7th inning of his second start in the majors. He's been incredible. But bigger picture, when you look at all this, Jeff, like, is it just we're in a really good year, or is it that pitching development's different, or what kind of stands out to you of had these pitchers were kind of hitting the ground running in the major leagues?
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this for a couple of years. I think there's a few things going on. I do think that AAA and how difficult it's been over the last couple of years to compete just in terms of like what those strike zones are like. Because even without the ABS, full ABS system like you had on some nights in AAA last year, you have the challenge system. So, that margin for error, getting away with a strike on the outside edge just isn't there. And I think, if you play baseball, you watch baseball games, you coach baseball games, you know how much of a difference one call can make in terms of how the rest of an inning plays out and how things can snowball. So it might allow them to adjust to some of that stuff, maybe in real time a little bit more. I think that's one part of it. I think the other part of it is guys are training for pitching athletically very early in development, 13, 14, 15 years old. And I don't mean in terms of pitch grips and throwing curveballs and sliders. That stuff's happening too. But I think it's just the amount of development facilities all throughout the country where these guys are on nutrition and training programs. So they're really optimizing their body's capacity to throw hard. And so I think we're seeing this generation come through that had a lot of this sort of science-based nutrition and training stuff all throughout like their adolescence up until the time that they turn professional. And it's allowed them to come into professional environments and adapt a lot easier because they come in, they can say, okay, I'm used to doing work like this. I'm used to having these sort of training sessions, which is very different from, I think, what we even experienced 30 years ago and probably even 15 to 20 years ago. I think a lot of that has changed. So we're seeing
plus one for saying we on that, because, you know, like I would say that I will just have to admit that I'm of a previous generation to you. So, but I'll appreciate the plus one. I'll give you a thank you on the
I was going to, you know, I'm kind of Gen X. I'm really a very old millennial, you know, but I feel a kinship with the Gen X. So I was throwing it out there, but yeah, I think you look at that stuff and I do think it has an impact on like how quickly these guys are able to scale up. But the stuff we're seeing, particularly from like right-handed starting pitchers, is phenomenal. We mentioned Chase Burns. We talked about Mizorowski. Some of the other righties that are at the top of our list, Roki Sasaki, we saw, I think there's some shape stuff there, but certainly from a power perspective, that's not in question. Bubba Chandler is another one. He struggled over the month of June. First couple months of the season, I think we were all kind of banging on the door, maybe expected him to be up before Burns or Mizorowski. Another guy with huge stuff. You go down the list, Travis Sikora, another really hard thrower. Harlan Suzan is injured now, but another guy who sat 99.7 last year over like a 1,000 fastball sample, which is kind of ridiculous. I mean, there's not many guys on this list that don't throw hard. You look at the righties that don't throw hard, it's like Logan Henderson at the back end of the list. And Rhett Lauder. Left-handers, it's a little bit different, but the expectations for velocity from a left-hander are down a couple miles per hour from what you expect from a righty. So we're just seeing guys with much more velocity. But I think in the case of Burns and Mizorowski, they also blend some of those characteristics, that rule of three that I always talk about, whether it be release characteristics with a Mizorowski or movement characteristics with Burns. And you kind of got to have two of the three. And in some instances, I think particularly with Mizorowski, he kind of has all three. Burns is a little bit higher, which might turn to be an issue. It hasn't been in the minor leagues. We did see him be homer prone at times in Wake Forest. Now, granted, Wake Forest is a difficult place to not give up home runs if you know that ballpark. So, you know, these are all things that are kind of there in the mix. But ultimately, that combination of movement and power really makes these guys unique.
We said before we started recording this, like, we got a top 100 update coming real soon. And one of the things with that is that I would say with Mizorowski, especially Burns is already in our top 10, but Mizorowski is going to move up again because the thing wrote about it last month, right? Kind of had a start. I don't want to go overboard and say like, that's the moment that Jacob Mizorowski became Jacob Mizorowski. Jacob Mizorowski's had nasty stuff for a very long time, but you've seen him improve as a pitcher this year. That start we wrote about from when him against Memphis, where he kind of sat 98 and then kind of ramped up to 103 when he needed it. Like pitching at 98, reaching back for 103, pitching in a pinch in the most key moments. That was amazing. But on top of that, and you've seen this in the majors so far, the thing that has really stepped forward with him, I know I overuse strike percentage. I do. I love strike percentage. I think strike percentage overall is underused as far as looking at pitchers, because I will tell you right now, we can talk about many, many things, but if you really want to simplify it, when you say, well, why is Bubba Chandler struggling? The innings that Bubba Chandler is struggling right now, the stuff's still really good. He's not throwing strikes. And you can say good strikes, bad strikes, but he's not throwing strikes. If you're down 3-0 in a count, Bubba Chandler's not nearly as scary as he is when he's 1-2. And there's a lot more 3-0s. But with Mizorowski, until this year, Mizorowski was a sub-60% strike percentage guy. Strike percentage in the major leagues, you need to be in that 63-64 range. You know, ideally a little bit above, a little bit below, getting, you could get chases, all that, right? But in that range, sub-60%, that's not good enough. That is not going to be effective in the major leagues. This year, he's been a 64% guy. That's a big jump. That's like a 5% jump. And we've seen it like, okay, if that's control, we've also seen it in these first couple of starts, his command, he's dotting that edge of the zone. You know, that glove side edge for him has really worked for him. And then he has that curveball that he's able to get arm side down. Like, so he's challenging multiple quadrants of the plate as well. When you have those, that combo, and you throw 101 and you throw, when you talked about the, you know, the velocity and all this, the other thing we are seeing now, I would say, you know, and we are, I'd say both people who like, no, pitching just does keep getting better because there's so many different things that people do now, that teams do, that coaches do, that pitchers do. But nowadays there is that kind of that feeling that you can, you kind of present the buffet of pitches and you figure out what fits for you. Well, Mizorowski has there has never been a 96 mile an hour slider from a starting pitcher. That is a, I wouldn't say that's a new pitch because it is, and we would say it is a slider that is relying on power much more. I want to kick this back to you on this because you dive into this more than I do. Power more than movement. But when you say, okay, well, then why is it effective if it's not moving that much? You can explain it better than I can, but it is moving different than the 101 mile an hour fastball. And it's also he's locating it different. But could you explain further to people, how can a 96 mile an hour fastball that if you want to, again, it's on the spectrum, I would say it's slider, but it's in that cutter to slider spectrum, right?
Once you get a slider up to a certain velocity, it starts to move like a cutter. And I think some of that might be the fact that, you know, we talk about fastball movement and how guys that throw a certain velocity need less ride, but also there's less timing to the plate for that to actually occur. And I think it's probably pretty similar.
Can I interrupt for a second? Just because this is like a completely different tangent, but it's just something that is a little maybe interesting tidbit to people. When we talk about velocity, and I still get from people, well, they just need to move the mound back. What you explained right there is why when they did the experiment in the Atlantic League to move the mound back, it didn't help because of exactly what you said, which is if you put Jacob Mizorowski on a mound a foot back, 6 inches back, 3 feet back, yes, you will have more time to react to his fastball. But what you just said there, it's also going to make all his breaking pitches even nastier because now they have more time to move. Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you look at the pitch, it's 7 vert, 3 horizontal. It's more or less, you know, kind of like the perfect cutter movement where if it had any more ride, it sort of gets into that cut fastball territory, right? But I think some of that is it's not going to get like, even though if you look at how it spins, it kind of spins like a gyro slider. If you go on to like the Savant pages and it gives you like the animated, you know, it kind of has bullet spin. But I think once again, as it comes out of the hand a certain way, it's not going to get, you know, as much drop as something that's 84, 85. It also might be a matter of it just is like pretty pure bullet spin and stays on sort of the same plane. That's the kind of physics stuff that I don't necessarily get to that point that I fully understand it. There's probably guys that understand it better. But I think that, you know, you look at a pitch that moves this hard, that doesn't move like a fastball, it's not moving arm side. It's just so unusual. And, you know, this was a conversation I had last week with, you know, Justin Willard from the Red Sox, you know, who's their pitching director. And he said, you know, at the end of the day, just be different. And I thought that was it didn't make its way into the article, but as we were talking, I thought it was a really interesting point of just, you know, do things differently and that will keep guys off balance. And it's true.
And Jacob Mizorowski throws a slider that when I say like, again, there may be a reliever out there who's had something like this, but there is no starting pitcher. Like he already has more 96 mile an hour sliders than any starting pitcher in the PitchFX / Baseball Savant era, right? 2008 to present, the leaderboard of most 96 mile an hour sliders by a starter. Two starts into his career is Jacob Mizrowski. By the way, if you said 100 plus mile an hour pitches by a starter, Mizrowski's in the top 20 already. When we say even in an era of special stuff where we literally already, we wrote about it today at baseballamerica.com yesterday by the time you're hearing this. But if you check out baseballamerica.com about Chase Burns' start, we looked at every starting pitcher, rookie starter who's thrown 100, and every starting pitcher who's thrown 20 or more 100-mile-an-hour pitches in the major leagues. Mizrowski's in the top 20 on the overall career list already. He is special, even in an era where we've kind of gotten jaded and a guy throwing 100 is like, okay, that's nice. Where it used to be, I'm not joking when I say, I spent a decade chasing it. Like, I remember, now he works for the Rangers, but Josh Boyd at the office one night being like, Brandon League's throwing in Greensboro tonight. You know, he could touch 100. It's like, I'm there. Let's go. And we drove off to Greensboro and got 99, which that was often what I got. I got 98, got 99. 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I kept looking for it. I never saw it. And by the way, if you want to say, oh, the radar guns are just better now. No. Stalker 2. I still have a Stalker 2.
Yeah, and so do I. And like, I got my gun in 2021. And I don't think I got 100 until a year later. And it was in AAA. And it was a reliever, and it was a former major leaguer. It was it Mauricio Cabrera mm-hmm. from the Braves? That was the first triple digit I ever got. Since then, I've gotten a lot. You know, since then, I've seen guys like Mason Miller and you know, guys that sat nearly 100. You know, Harlan Susana. I mean, I get hundreds all the time.
I don't know if I've gotten 100 on the and I don't go to that yet. Many games.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten 100 on the Cape yet. But I feel like that's probably pretty close to happening. I've gotten 99. I've never gotten 100 on the Cape yet. So when that happens, that will be the real breakthrough.
I will end this story by just saying before we get into our division, you know, AL East update. But I will say, so I'd never gotten 100. I'd never gotten 100. Durham, 2010, I think it is. Louisville's in town. Late innings arrive. In comes Aroldis Chapman. I got 100 when he was warming up, if I remember correctly. But most importantly, I got 103 in the game. Like, and it is a moment for me I'll never forget, is to see, like, to go from I've never seen 100 and then to get like 100, 101, 102, 103. Like, I jumped. I had had all these years and all of a sudden I'm seeing 103. And at the time it's like, he's not throwing 103 in the majors. Like 2 months later, he's throwing 105, 106, you know? So that was the, and once I've done that, Ray Black and Aroldis Chapman, I think are the two hardest throwers I've ever seen. But yeah, like this year, Joe Boyle, Luis May, Zach Maxwell. I'm trying to think again, I've seen numerous hundreds this year and
I got one from Brandon Clark.
Yeah. Haven't been hunting it. It's just now part of the game, you know?
Yeah. But 100%.
But that's, speaking of Brandon Clark, that is a perfect segue. After this quick break, we're going to dive in and take a look at the state of the farm systems for all five AL East teams right after this quick break. When you make a hire, it doesn't take long before you know. You know what I mean. You know. You know if you nailed the hire. Is your new addition going to be a star? Or did you make a mistake? Find your company's next star with Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Indeed has helped us hire stars at Baseball America time and time again. Some of the people you hear on our podcast came to us through hires we made through Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Hire rock stars right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. And we're back. So, Jeff, we're going to go alphabetical order here, right? We're not going to say this is the best farm system as far as how we talk about these. But so we're going to start off with the Baltimore Orioles. It has not been a season at the major league level that the Orioles would want, obviously. But we're looking at the farm system here. And I would say with that, so let's start with the most premium positive here, which is any organization in baseball would be happy to have their top prospects list fronted by a prospect of the caliber of Samuel Basayo. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yes, I think that is 100% accurate.
What is it about Basayo that really jumps out? By the way, Ellie for us just did a StatCast standout this past weekend about Basayo. You could almost feel the drool coming off of his, like having to mop it up as he talked about like just the combination of power and ability to get to that power and all that. But what is it that stands out about Basayo?
Yeah, I think, it's number one, there's still a chance that he could stick behind the plate. And I think the thing that we've learned is it's really hard for us as like public evaluators to get a great feel on what organizations can do in terms of improving receiving. Because there's too many guys, Cal Raleigh, Austin Wells. There's just too many names that look like they were below average defensive catchers that have grown into really good catchers and guys who have a bat as well. And I think Basayo sort of fits into that group. He's bigger at 6'4". He's more physical than those guys were at the same age. Just 20 years old. And, he's putting up a 152 WRC plus really in his second run of AAA, but he only had 21 games at the end of last year.
Got a cup of coffee there.
Exactly. It was 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And, over the beginning of this season is one of the youngest, if not the youngest player in AAA. The numbers have been outrageous. The strikeout rate is by no means concerning, 23.5%. You expect that to tick up a little bit. But he seems like he's going to be
but that's thumbs up. Like for the power he has, you're like, I'll take that every day of the week.
And I'll go a step further. The power and on base skills that he has, you will take that every day of the week. Because typically when a guy is walking 14.3% of the time, it kind of lines up with extreme passivity. I don't think that's the case. I do think he discerns balls and strikes very well, consistently hits stuff hard and in the air. All of those metrics are up this year. His barrel rate is way up. His average launch angle over a short sample was only 54 events, but enough for it to standardize. Was like his average launch angle last year was 2.5 degrees. It's 15 degrees this year. Average EV, 94 miles per hour. Max EV, 115.9. I mean, you're putting up numbers that as a 20-year-old, when your power hasn't even peaked yet. Typically 23, 24, 25 is when we see the EV numbers kind of plateau. That's kind of when your raw, I think, kind of meets its max, and then game power will come down to how you operate the barrel and the angles that you hit it at and backspin and all that sort of stuff. But I think you just look across the board at the skills and they're pretty good. He's a 46% swing rate guy, 86% zone contact, which is perfect. We'll chase a little bit, but I think he's one of these guys. And we talked about this with like Jack Caglianone and Jordan Walker when he was coming up as a prospect. Not that either of those guys have tore up the major leagues, but these bigger guys with longer levers have the ability to get stuff that's either high or just outside in the shadow zone. That's technically a chase swing, but it's not a bad chase swing. It's not like they were fooled by a pitch that's way out of the zone that they have no chance of hitting. A lot of this stuff they can make contact with. So I think maybe tightening that stuff up a little bit, but when you look at the fact that he's walking as much as he is while still being somewhat of an aggressive hitter with that quality of contact, it makes him really special as a hitter. And I think you can even look at some of the swing decisions and say, okay, that stuff that as you project out for years, it scales and gets better.
So that's the big highlight, I would say. The other thing I would say for the Orioles is that there are some guys who are kind of breaking out, right? Like there are a couple of guys interesting to watch. I would say Nate George, who was in the complex and now is in A-ball, is one that really stands out as a guy who, you know, high school, Midwest high school kid, a little bit colder weather, and has really shown ability, lower levels, caveat, to control the zone. But also there are real tools there. He's really fast. He's hit the ball well. Yasmel Bucci, who is a guy I would say, I would kind of like the swing, but at the same time, like, he's another guy who kind of fits in that. What is his defensive role going to be? But he's really hit. Dylan Beavers is having a very solid season. That's where I would say if you wanted to say, okay, again, we're not just trying to be all, you know, all positive and happy and sunny and all. If you want to be critical of the Orioles in recent years, I think it's fair to say this is an organization that goes all in at the top of the draft on college outfielders year after year after year. And they've had a run of them where you're like, okay, this guy may reach the majors, but they're not, like, a lot of these guys haven't kind of become the, you know, Judd Fabian's having a fine year, but I would say at this point, it's hard to argue that Judd Fabian, he's probably more role player than regular. Maybe not, because the defense is probably going to help him and all that if he keeps getting better. But Vance Honeycutt, really big tools. There are concerns about the hit tool. We can still say that. Enrique Bradfield, I kind of always said, I really like Enrique Bradfield. If I could fuse Enrique Bradfield's defense and speed that he has with Chandler Simpson's speed and hitting ability, I think you have like the perfect center field leadoff, bottom of the order type prospect, because Bradfield's really good defensively. I just don't think the hit tool is kind of a little bit of a question with him. It's never been nearly as strong as, say, a guy like Chandler Simpson, who's kind of that same profile. The problem for Chandler Simpson is he doesn't have Bradfield's defense in center. But so you have kind of like that, where I would say that there are concerns. The other thing I will say to their credit, but also, again, with a little bit of caveat, is when you say, well, what about the pitching? There are some interesting pitching prospects in this organization starting to reach AA. You know, we can talk about Trey Gibson, Braxton Bragg, Michael Ferret, Esteban Mejia, you know, who Esteban Mejia is, you know, who's further down. They're interesting. I would say that other than Mejia, these are guys who kind of profile more at the back of rotation or a reliever than they do as a guy who's going to be, if you have Orioles fans saying, who's going to be that guy who becomes our next front of the rotation guy? It's a little harder to project that. That can happen, but anything else that stands out to you about the Orioles before we jump over to Boston?
No, it's funny that the pitching seems to be the thing that's kind of on the upswing right now in this system, considering they do not really invest any money in pitching in the draft or, you know, internationally or whatever. They've done a pretty good job of targeting interesting traits, and some of those guys have turned into something. A lot of the playbook that they were running 5 years ago on hitters did them a lot of good and got them a lot of talent. It's a little different when you have less money to play with in the draft, I think. Maybe you can't pull some of those prep guys down to a different pick. But some of it has been targeting too. You know, Judd Fabian, they targeted really for 2 years. We kind of hear the story about, you know, how he had a deal before the Red Sox took him, and that's one of the reasons he went back to Florida. And you know, I think we all liked some of the things that Judd Fabian did, particularly as an underclassman at Florida, but there were major question marks about, you know, the totality, you know, the holistic part of the profile, if it would actually work because of some of the swing and miss concerns. And I think with Enrique Bradfield, we always thought that the impact might be a little bit capped unless there were angles and some weight that was put on. An interesting player, but, you know, not phenomenal. And I think, like, you look at Vance Honeycutt, another guy where there were some tools that you really like. You can see Vance Honeycutt like I did in the spring breakout game, where he hit an inside the park home run. And it's like, yeah, he can get a ball to a gap and then just get on his horse. And there's not many guys that are faster around the bases. Also made some phenomenal plays in the outfield. So you'll see that. But then you go back and you look at it and you're like, hey, the contact quality is good. All the stuff is good. And then you look and it's like, oh my God, he has a 56% contact rate or whatever it is right now. And so I think maybe they went a little bit too far with not worrying about bat to ball skill, that there's still maybe a threshold you have to be above. And some of the guys they've targeted over the last couple of years, and Fabian and Honeycutt in particular, maybe don't meet that mark.
Before we move on to the Red Sox, I should also mention Bragg is on the IL right now, forearm. So like that's one, but he has been a very much, I would say, an encouraging part of the season. So we're going to flip it over to the Red Sox, our second team, in our look at all of the AL East prospect updates. And I'm probably going to say about 10 words here because Jeff covers the Red Sox for us. Jeff, as he mentioned, just had a piece last week talking about their pitching development and all there. So I'll just start by saying, obviously, now we have the big three has reached the majors and now one of them's back. I would say I'm not that worried right now that Christian Campbell is back in AAA. I like how Alex Bregman kind of made a point of telling him, like, hey, go look at what I did in my big league debut. I think there was a 1-for-43 or something like stretching that. Like, you can go look at, there are a number of players who, especially bouncing around like he did. I would say that Christian Campbell's struggles in the major leagues are more about defense than anything. If he was playing one position and playing it well defensively, than all of these concerns. And I think that that really goes back to the Red Sox really strong belief in Campbell. Like, they didn't expect him to play shortstop last year. And then when Meyer went down, they put him at shortstop. They're like, he's not that bad here. They kind of have a really a lot of belief in his athleticism and ability to play multiple positions. At the same time, it ended up being a little bit too much for him too fast, it seems like. But that's my segue to kind of kick it to you. When you look at the Red Sox and where they are here at the midseason, what's the good, what's the bad?
Yeah, you know, I think there's not necessarily a lot of bad. I think the biggest question is obviously the struggles of Anthony and Meyer, who are still, you know, technically prospects. You know, they've had flashes, they've had moments. I think they'll start to get their footing soon, especially if the team sticks with them. They look like they're a big part of the future. I'm not concerned about either of those guys. I'm not really concerned about Campbell. I think he's too good of an athlete and, you know, was just too good of a hitter for the first month he was in the majors and all of last year. And I think when you consider he had 1 year of college baseball and it was really like truly a meteoric rise, you got to give that guy some time to have some struggles and get his footing and all those sort of things. And you talked about, you know, Bregman coming up the first time and him struggling. I can recall Mike Trout coming up and him struggling. There's a lot of guys like that that struggle and then figure something out, make the adjustment and come back stronger. There's also a lot of guys that come up and are great early on that, you know, falter and never figure it out. You know, Keston Hiura hit a lot when he first came up to the big leagues and he's been struggling to get back in the major leagues for like the last three or four.
Speaking seasons. Of defensive issues, that's a good one.
Exactly. Like, I think there's a lot of that stuff. So we'll see what happens with Campbell. I think he's a good enough athlete. He's going to figure out a position. He played a lot of different positions last year. He did a lot of off the field work to improve that swing. It's reasonable to think that some of the defensive stuff might be a little deficient or might not necessarily be, you know, like super clean because he's just not getting the reps at one position consistently all the time. I mean, before games last year, he was taking balls in the outfield. He was taking balls at third base. He was taking balls at shortstop. He was taking balls at second base. And now he's going to learn
first base this year.
Yeah, now he's going to learn first base. So we'll see how that all goes. Now, beyond those top guys in the system, I think there's a lot of encouraging players coming up through the system right now. We've talked about how good the pitching is. Outside of the top three players, which are Anthony Meyer and Franklin Arias, who's also a top 100 prospect, great hit tool guy. Over the last month when the weather started to get a little better, we're starting to see Arias catch a few more barrels, hit for a little bit more power, had a big week a couple weeks ago where I think he had two or three homers. That's a really encouraging sign. He's still a super young, talented player. I think it's important to keep in mind how little experience he's had professionally and where he is in terms of his, you know, development. The fact that he is in Greenville, I think is really important. The pitching is really exciting. Now, Tolley has continued to be a horse. He just got the promotion to bump up to Portland. So I'll probably see Tolley either next week in New Hampshire or the second half of the week, potentially in Portland. As long as it's not 4th of July, I am not driving up to Maine on the 4th of July. Sorry. I'll catch him after that. Clark has been out with an injury. It's like a fingernail blister thing. I think there's a chance he returns this week. Obviously, you have Perales, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery. But to his credit, prior to that injury, was one of the highest helium, highest rising pitching prospects sort of at our midseason update.
He had a rocket ship on him before
that. Yeah, the stuff is great. Another guy that you can move up. Valera is dealing with an injury. So we have had some injuries since things went well. It kind of all cascaded the week that
I will say, I'm going to get you, I'm going to jump to one, which is this, and David Sandlin lately has started to show.
Yeah, he hasn't been bad, but he kind of moved down because you had some guys who were really performing. Conley Early has been pretty good this year, took a big step forward. He's, you know, one of the best left-handers in the upper minors this year, just based on performance. He's been really good. He's the best left-hander in the system. And you had some major league guys. Dobbins just graduated. I believe Richard Fitz will probably graduate tonight or his next appearance. So some of those guys are moving up. But yeah, you have a guy like David Sandlin where they're trying to kind of figure out his usage. It's kind of a higher release point. It's a little bit easier to see kind of the opposite of what Jacob Mizorowski was, kind of going back to that conversation early. So they're trying to work around it. And I think a lot of that is the quality of all of his different pitches and sort of taking an approach of throwing the breaking balls more against certain lineups and really kind of living by the game plan in terms of where he needs to execute. And he's been doing a pretty good job of that. He's shown more starter traits this season than he had at any other point in his professional career, dating back to his time a few years ago with the Royals when he first sort of broke out due to the quality of his stuff. And then you go down the system, there's guys in the second half, guys like Justin Gonzalez, who's a really interesting prospect. Jedison Paya is a pitching prospect who's been pretty good. Nellie Taylor, or even Miguel Blaise, has had a pretty good season at Greenville. And he's so tooled up that I think he's still of value. You got guys like Blaise Jordan.
Okay, wait, pause. I wanted to ask about this. Mark Chiarelli, you know, our Blaise Jordan supporter for many, many years. But Blaise is having, I would say, like, I feel like with Blaise, I wanted to ask you the question. Like, I feel like when you talk about as far as who's having the best just pure year as a hitter in the minors for them, it's hard to really nitpick a lot of what Blaise Jordan is doing. Now, it is a, I would say, not a bat only, but a very bat forward profile, right? Like if you say, where is Blaise Jordan going to play in the majors? This is the guy who, like you say, first base, that's probably his home. But there's not a lot to dislike about how he's hit this year.
I think the thing that you have to look at with Blaise Jordan is there were always outlier bat to ball skills and bat speed there. Didn't always manifest itself in power. And the thing that kind of sunk him, and it wasn't necessarily from a statistical standpoint, but maybe so, he didn't walk. He loved to swing the bat. His approach at the plate was very similar to like a super twitchy shortstop that could run and hit the ball the other way. There was a lot of oppo contact.
Which is not what you want for a first base profile.
No, no. There was a lot of chase. It's a little bit high in AAA. It's a smaller sample size. It hasn't standardized yet. But his chase rate was down significantly, like 30, 40% year over year in AA last year to this year. Big adjustment there. You know, the contact rates have always been pretty good.
He's walking as much as he strikes out, which
exactly
that, as you said, he's always had a pretty good strikeout rate, but getting that walk rate up to that's, and I would say the other thing with him that I would point out, like you said, there's always been bat speed. There's always been raw power, but going back to high school and you say, why was he so famous? The weird part of it is what made him so famous was the thing that's really not his game, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's that he hits the ball 480 feet. Look at the power showcase and all that. That's never been Blaise Jordan. Blaise Jordan, I would say, is more likely to hit 300 in a season in the majors than he is to hit 40 homers.
100%. I think the thing though that, and this is a lesson, is like when first baseman, and when we talk about how difficult those profiles are, you know, in terms of developing those guys and becoming big leaguers. There's only 30 of those jobs. There's 30 DH jobs, and some of those are going to get cycled through guys at other positions where they have some redundancy and want to get the bat in the lineup. So you really have to hit. You have to marry everything. As I think the perfect example was like Vinny Pasquantino, not as highly ranked as Nick Prado, not even close. Prado had a good season. And then the next year, Pasquantino sort of showed up and he passed him. And he showed that he married contact on base ability and power. Blaze is doing that now. Like, he's at a point where he has an opportunity to be a starting first baseman in the majors. He's not, his hands and actions have always been good at third. He's just not rangy. His arm is good. It's the range that has kind of limited him at third base. It hasn't necessarily been his ability to play it. So he'll probably be a pretty good defensive first baseman too. And this is an organization, by the way, that's platooning two guys at the majors who have been hitting. So there's no immediate need. But if one of those guys goes down, I think there's a good chance that Blaze is probably up with the major league team at some point this summer.
But okay, well, moving it on, we're going to go straight from the Red Sox to the Yankees. I would say that Yankees fans right now at the major league level are a little bit like, it started out great, and now they're looking at it and saying, there are some holes here, which were, I would say, somewhat apparent going into the season that this is a lineup that was fronted by, you know, one of the greatest players of all time. Let's just put, I think Aaron Judge fits in that category now pretty clearly. Like, we're talking about an all-time great, but who around him, there needs to be help, right? And especially now, obviously they've had significant injuries. Losing Gerrit Cole is not something that any team just goes, oh, no big deal. So there's things like that. But when we look at them at the minor league level, there's also been a lot of injuries. So let's start by asking this, right? Spencer Jones is having a very good season in Double A this year, you could say. At this point, how useful is that? Like, the fact that he is in Double A, to me, tells me probably as much as anything he's done in Double A this year. Am I being too harsh when I say, like, he finished the season in 23 in Double A. He spent all of 24 in Double A and really, you know, struggled to make enough contact. And then he's back there and now almost up to 200 plate appearances in Double A this year. That oblique injury, so he did miss some time. And it's a 33% strikeout rate this year, which is an improvement, but still gives me a lot of pause.
I don't know what to do with this guy because he's the best. He's one of the best hitters in the minors this year, statistically. I mean, it's a 186 WRC plus. Now, granted, he is repeating the level in his age, you know, 24 season, just turned 24 about a month ago. But he's got 15 homers in 46 games and he's walking 16.4% of the time. So I think he is an example of, can he get to that threshold that he needs to in terms of consistent contact? I don't know if he's there yet. Because despite those numbers, it's still an 18.1% swinging strike rate. It's a 58.7% contact rate. Those are well below average.
The fact he's still in Double A tells you that they, like, again, I don't want to go overboard about assignments, but assignments do tell you something. And the fact that he's still in Double A tells you that they still have concerns that if they bumped him up, that they want to build a very, understandably, a very solid foundation here. Because to Spencer Jones' credit, last year could break, the last 2 years in some ways could break a lot of players, right? From a standpoint of, he set the all-time Yankees minor league strikeout record last year. That's something that's tough. Like, when you are having days where you're just striking out at bat after at bat, it can be very difficult. But the fact that they kind of still have him there, like you said, these underlying numbers are still cautionary enough that they can't be like, great, this is fixed, moving on. Now he's in AAA knocking on the door. Because let's also be clear, if Spencer Jones has taken a step forward. This is an organization that could use him at the major league level, because when it all clicks, he is a premium, you know, he's athletic. There's real power here, but I think that they're understandably still concerned that if you brought him up, he might hit a buck 75, you know, draw some walks, hit some bombs, but that won't be enough. And then, okay, George Lombard Jr., I would say we heard coming into the year, watch out for George Lombard Jr. I would still say he is very far from a finished product, but you love what you're seeing. He controls strike zone. You want to see more power develop as he gets older. He's good defense. Like, there's a lot there to like. I would say after that, though, the thing that does jump out about this Yankees list is I would say it's a very pitcher heavy list right now. Like, there aren't a whole lot of other bats that I'm pointing to and saying, hey, keep an eye on him. And I would say with that, like, and on the pitching side, you know, I do think we should get into like talking about, there are guys like that have kind of taken steps forward, but at the same time, it's also, again, I would say it's a mix of guys who, some of them kind of fit in the reliever bucket, some of them fit more in the back end starter bucket than it is guys who you're like, oh, okay, you know, here are top 100 type prospect pitching prospects who project as middle rotation starters or above. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think that's the strength of this organization right now. You look at Cunningham, you look at Legrandhe, Elmer Rodriguez Cruz is a really interesting arm. The other one I want to talk about.
He better be now, because they're all like, there are a ton of people who know about that trade now.
That was a good trade for both teams. Yeah. That was a good trade for both teams. There was nowhere that Navarez was going to play for the Yankees. They can be upset about that. You had Austin Wells. You weren't going to get rid of Austin Wells because this guy in AAA might be really good. They're mad because he got traded to the Red Sox, you know. But hey, maybe they should stop trading with the Red Sox. I mean, we got Richard Fitz for, you know, the entirety of the opening of his career, or the Red Sox did, for, you know, the ghost of Alex Verdugo, who made the last out in the World Series. So, but the one I want to talk about is Cam Schlittler, who happens to be a Massachusetts native. The improvements that this guy has made since his last year at Northeastern, and the guy that I saw in the Cape, where like the pitch shapes were just super inconsistent. He's a big guy, 6'6", 6'7". Former basketball player out here, you know, committed full time, obviously, to pitching. And we've seen him grow by leaps and bounds. This year, he's up to AAA. He's had an excellent statistical season across both levels. And he's throwing a slider as his primary pitch. He's throwing a couple of different breaking ball shapes. The stuff is really pretty good. And he's showing variation within the pitch mix and the ability to command a bunch of different shapes. He's been one of the arms that's maybe been talked about the least, not even in the Yankee system, but just maybe in the minors in general. But like, the slider this year has been averaging 91 miles per hour. It's been up to 93, about 5 inches of vert, 7 inches of horizontal, you know, kind of a higher release height guy. So it kind of plays up some of the plane on his pitches. Fastball has averaged 96 miles an hour this year, up to 98. That's different from the guy that we saw in college. It's kind of a pure cut ride four seam. It's like 16 inches of vert with 1 inch to 2 inches of horizontal. He mixes a curveball. He mixes a sweeper slider as well in the mid 80s. It is a really interesting pitch mix. And I think you take a look at the fact that he mixes so many different shapes. He's kind of an underrated guy in this system. And there's more arms behind that. There's Ben Hess, who's pretty interesting. You know, Henry Lalanne, I don't know when we see him. Thatcher Hurd got hurt, so we may see him for a couple of years. Chase Hampton's another one who was, you know, climbing up our ranks, looked like he was a shoo-in to be in the majors maybe this summer. He blew out, and, you know, now he's on the recovery. And even some of the names further down this list in terms of the international guys, few organizations do as good of a job of really hammering and scouting the international market and signing big classes of talented, interesting prospects like the Yankees do. And they've been doing it for 15 plus years.
Moving it on to the Rays, organization I do for our midseason updates. I would say overall, hadn't been a great year for the Rays farm system. I say that from the standpoint of, like, in an ideal world, you want your best prospects to really be performing, right? And Carson Williams, it's gotten better, but he had a very brutal start to the season. I'm not that shocked by that. I do feel like we tried to write about this. We've written about this for multiple years. It's like, I know he had a good year last year. There was no one I've ever talked to at the Rays who thought that he was big league ready at the end of last year. Glove-wise, maybe, but they knew that his hit tool is further behind the glove. And there still are some questions about long-term offensive impact. Like, how good is the hit tool going to be? There's real power there. He's really good defensively at short. But so that's like a concern. He has not particularly performed at AAA. Again, it's starting to get better. Braden Taylor, who has kind of always been Mr. Consistent, has been Mr. Inconsistent this year. He's really struggled in AA. You know, they just, their top 100 prospects coming into the year, those young pitchers that they have, Gary Gilhill is still a solid prospect, but I would say stuff-wise and all, he's a little bit below this year what he was last year. You kind of hope maybe that this would be the year that a Trevor Harrison or a Brody Hopkins or a Jackson Baumeister kind of takes that big step forward where you're like, okay, now they're knocking on the door of the big leagues. I wouldn't say that we're there yet with any of those, and Baumeister's really kind of struggled at times. The thing that's really good about this organization, I would say right now, is that there's still just so many guys, right? Like, the guys who are in the 11 to 20 or the 20 to 30 on this list are interesting guys who I can map to useful big league roles. And in some cases, even starters. Like, Homer Bush Jr. probably won't be a big league regular, but he could. And there's a lot of organizations that don't have guys like that in the teens, kind of things like that. So that's where I think they really do stand out. Joe Boyle doesn't count as a prospect for this, but I would say, like, there are a few guys sitting in AAA ready to start in the majors better than Joe Boyle is this year. To their credit, this is something we expect with the Rays. It's like, oh, you're talking about a guy with great stuff who's always had control and command problems. Give him to the Rays. The Rays are better at that than pretty much anybody. And the crazy thing about this, though, is they haven't needed him. Why? Because their Rays big league club has had their five starters basically take their turn in the rotation every time in the first half of the season. All these guys are over 70 innings so far. Most of them have been quite good. You know, you could say like Tosh Bradley has been a little bit more up and down, but they've been really good. The team that everyone talks about is the opener is the team that now has the, we're just rolling with these five starters who are going to give us innings and are going to be effective time after time after time. The only reason Boyle got a start was that they just wanted to give an extra day rest one time. That's the only start they've had so far this year at their big league club by a non-member of their regular five-man rotation. Again, there have been positive stories as well, I would say, with this team. TJ Nichols, just talked about it with the Rays. We said, give the Rays guys who have good stuff and don't have a whole lot of control. TJ Nichols never had a lot of control and command in college baseball. I think you may have seen him. Was he a Cape guy?
I don't know if he was.
Okay. But
I did watch him in Arizona, right?
Yeah, Arizona. And now here he is striking out everybody, but not walking anybody as well, throwing strikes. You know, they do that. Jose Urbina is interesting. They have a lot of interesting arms. They have a lot of interesting bats. I would just say that, but what they haven't had this year are the guys who are kind of taking that big step forward, right? Like Xavier Isaac is still very interesting, but I don't think you could say with Xavier Isaac, hey, any concerns I had last year have been all wiped away, right?
Yeah. I think the best story in the Rays minor league system right now isn't a prospect. It's a guy who passed his prospect status that they acquired, who I think I have rostered in every single fantasy league that I'm currently active in. I am waiting for Joe Boyle to come back up because he looks like Tyler Glasnow 2.0 right now. He's dominating AAA. We talked about earlier how difficult of an assignment that is. We saw the incremental improvement in strikes and command a year ago. It's taken an even further step forward, and I'm sure that the Rays pitching development is a big part of that. Kudos to the Athletics. They've also had some decent pitching development over the last year. Some pitchers take a step forward. And that the first inkling that he was improving in terms of his command and strike throwing was in with the Athletics last year. So he's been so dominant. It's funny because it almost feels like their best prospect isn't even a prospect right now. And he's the guy most likely to impact the race down the stretch, I think.
I would just say one thing I'll say with that is I think that this has been a steady improvement, like going back to his time with the Reds, right? Like Joe Boyle is about the freshest 25-year-old arm you could possibly have because he never pitched. Like he pitched more innings in the Cape than he did at Notre Dame. Because every year at Notre Dame, it'd be like, this is the year that we're going to unlock Joe Boyle. And like 2 weeks into the season, it'd be like, he's walking everyone. And then they would just say, like, he's not pitching anymore for us. So like Joe Boyle's, I do remember in the Reds organization, like them just basically telling Joe Boyle, trust your stuff, go out there. And by the way, if you walk four guys in the first, you're going to have the ball for the second. I think that was the key first step for him to kind of be at that point where it's like, we believe in you. You're really good. Then he got to the A's and they kind of got him to the big leagues. And as a starter, not as a, hey, we're just going to let him spray the ball over the place as a reliever, as a starter. And then for the Rays to then be like, hey, the Rays really kind of were in the offseason looking at it saying they needed an optionable starter, right? They needed a starter that they could have in AAA who could come up and come back down because they didn't have a lot of those guys. And here they have. They haven't needed it besides one start. But I'm with you. Like, Joe Boyle, there are multiple playoff contending teams out there who would have Joe Boyle being their number three or number four starter right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is outlier performance right now. He's a really exciting one.
But so that then takes us, and this is, again, this is going to be the Jeff Ponce show here, because Jeff is our Blue Jays guy. He's done the Blue Jays for us since the day that Jeff arrived at BA. And we talked about this last week on the show. So if this one ends up being slightly shorter, I will recommend rewind last week. We talked about the Blue Jays a lot last week as well on the podcast. But Jeff, when you look at the Blue Jays now, it does seem like that this is an organization that's taking a step forward, especially on the pitching side. What is happening on the pitching side this year?
Well, I think, you know, they brought in Ricky Meinhold a year ago, and he kind of oversaw the beginning of the transition. They then brought in Justin Lear, I believe, from the Giants, who I'm supposed to speak with tomorrow, by the way, JJ, for an article I'm writing on some of the differences and changes that they've made in their pitching development. So we'll get some more insight into that. But I think, you know, Justin coming into the program had a big impact, and the people that I talked to within the front office and around the organization really sing his praises and have from day one about how he did things differently. I'll get into more detail about what those differences are. I don't know at a level that I want to speak at right now in terms of, you know, knowledge, but I'll get there. But I think you look at some of the talent that's in the system, you Savage, Tiedemann, Steven, Johnny King, who we'll talk about in a minute, my prospect soapbox, they've done a good job over the last year of targeting a lot of really talented pitchers, going after the right traits. Even a guy like, he ended up blowing out and, you know, will miss the rest of the season and a good chunk of next year. But Jake Bloss, coming into the season, looked like he was a borderline top 100 prospect. We were hearing that from scouts. We were hearing it from analysts. His performance in the backfields and in the spring breakout game was excellent. It was a guy that, you know, had a rocket ship up to the majors last year with the Astros. And we kind of look at an arm like that, who's now outside of their top 10 because he's going to miss some time. He's a very real rotation piece. And there's some interesting arms further down the list. Gage Stanifer, Barriera looks like he was injured again, but he was kind of trending up. Ryan Jennings looks like he could be a legitimate, like, high leverage guy, not just like a future reliever, but someone that could be, you know, a seventh, eighth, ninth inning, you know, closer type. And then there's some bats coming in. You know, we saw Namawa's emergence. Roden was, you know, got into the major leagues and was pretty good. Kasevich is now back from injury. Or Elvis Martinez is starting to come into his own. Kenji Rojas has returned to the mound. So there's a lot of positives. And then, oh, you factor in the top 10 pick that's coming within the next few weeks. And there's going to be more talent coming into this organization again. So I think that's pretty exciting if you're a Blue Jays fan after some lean years in the farm over the last couple of years since this core of Vlad and Bo came up to the majors.
I would also say with that, like you've talked about, we've talked about Addison Barger a lot over the years, but him taking a big step forward, no longer a prospect, but taking a big step forward at the big league level is also very important for them because they needed some other guys like to kind of, hey, this is a young, you know, up and coming regular for them who also can really hit. And he's hitting better than I ever expected. I thought he might be fine. I didn't expect him to hit like he's hit this year, but he's really one, you know, who's been, I would say, kind of another breakout, you know, for them. And again, I feel better about where that organization is now than I did at this time last year, like both for the short and the longer term is the way I would put it. Like it does feel like that they've kind of turned a little bit of a corner in some ways. Yeah. Is that how you see it?
I think it's true. And I've given them credit for a few years. Maybe they didn't close the deals because they're up against the Dodgers or someone like that. They've been in on all the biggest names. They've been trying to build a super team here. They are willing to spend the money and do what it takes to get top talent here, you know, to get them to Toronto. And I think that goes a little bit underappreciated in this day and age where there are a lot of front offices that are willing to go up to a point. They're willing to throw dollars at Shohei Ohtani. They're willing to throw dollars at Juan Soto and Roki Sasaki. They were in as finalists on all of those guys. So I think it's a negative that they didn't sign those guys. But I think if you're a fan, you could take away a positive. This is an organization that is trying to win in the AL East. They don't come into a season like, all right, we're gonna have a bridge year this year. Last year, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Guys didn't perform. There were injuries. A ton of the backfill that they did have at the top of the system, guys like Tiedemann, et cetera, ended up getting injured. And they made a decision at the deadline to trade off some spare parts, and they got some interesting players. Two of the guys that they got, Hendrick Panongo from the Cubs, and then RJ Schreck, who they got for 41-year-old Justin Turner at the deadline, have been two of their better performing hitters in the minors this year. I think you look at some of that stuff, they're willing to make moves, they're willing to be aggressive, and they're figuring out stuff on the pitching side. So I think you got to give them some credit there. That's kind of the way that I would wrap it up. But this isn't an organization that's scared to spend money or go after stars. And there's just not a lot of that in our game. And I think it should be commended when it happens.
But okay. So we've covered the five AL East teams. Next week, it'll be the NL East. But before we wrap up, as we always do, we have our prospect soapboxes. The rule for this is simple. Non-top 100 prospects we're going to talk about here. Adding a second rule here. Did the AL East today. So we have to pick an AL East prospect to talk about. You've already sneak peeked yours. So Jeff, you get to go first. I'm going to guess you're talking about Johnny King since you said I'll be talking about Johnny King.
So this was like my white whale that I was chasing in spring training. I went everywhere I could. I tried to plan around it. My last day that I was there was supposed to see him. He ended up not pitching. So I never saw Johnny King. Josh is down there. Josh ends up getting Johnny King, but early on in Florida Complex League play, we were getting reports from scouts like, oh, watch this King guy. This is legit. Like, this is good stuff, good fastball quality. It's a good operation. It's projectable. It's not a deep pitch arsenal right now. It's primarily like a low 80s kind of two plane breaking ball. You could call it a curveball. You could call it a slurve, whatever you really want to call it name wise. It's a breaking ball. It moves, it drops, it moves arms, it moves glove side. You know, it's a two-planer. And then he's got a really good fastball, really interesting. Gets a lot of arm side run, gets some good ride on it too. And I think you can see from some of the video that Josh dropped yesterday, he gets way over his front side. The release height drops down a little bit. I would even expect maybe some of those release height numbers to drop once he gets onto the Hawkeye devices. It's an interesting plane of approach, and it's an athletic, repeatable delivery. I think you look at a guy like this, he's a bigger body. I know Josh said that yesterday he had the bases loaded. He was in a jam. Pitching coach or manager tried to take him out of the game. He's barking back, doesn't want that to be the case. Ends up getting a ground ball. The play wasn't made by the infield behind him. But he shows some of those traits of, you know, having some stones and and wanting to have the ball in his hand in those big moments. And that's great to see from a really young guy. So he's a name that I'm looking at as potentially somebody, once he does get to Dunedin, which I think will probably be in the next month, he can make significant jumps. And what we see with these young high school guys is they're rarely the same pitcher their first season that they are their third season. We saw it with Bubba Chandler. They add pitches. They figure out stuff. They become more efficient. They're much less fully formed than an 18-year-old prep draft pick hitter, a shortstop. You know, Kevin McGonigal wasn't a first rounder. Kevin McGonigal came into pro ball very polished. And I think you see that a lot with a lot of those high school guys, or they have really loud tools like an Elijah Green, who's kind of the opposite side of things from McGonigal, where he could, you know, he's always been a good fielder. There's always been power there. It's just a matter of hitting. But, you know, I think you look at some of these pitchers, their stuff, when you look at the TrackMan data, never kind of looks the way it does 3 years later. And I think he's got all the traits to scale. And that's why I'm pretty high on King.
Mine, going to stay with the Orioles. We talked about him a little bit. We also had him on the Hot Sheet show yesterday. If you want to check out on the YouTube channel here, we have on the Monday Hot Sheet show, we talked to Trey Gibson, pitcher out of Liberty, non-drafted free agent, who signed out of the Cape. I like guys who miss bats. It's a simple thing. I'm a simple man. I like guys who miss bats. And Trey Gibson misses this year 37% of the time. The guy who's standing at the plate has gone back to the dugout shaking his head. 37% strikeout rate this year. He has been up and down. There have been outings where he's been great. There have been outings where he gets lit up, especially a little bit homer prone. We talked about it, though. We talked to him. He talked about he has a very wide assortment of pitches, including the death ball that he was talking about. But the breaking ball is really like kind of one of the things that really stands out for him. When he's locating, especially, you know, that when he's spinning it, when he's locating it, he can really kind of get ahead and kind of dominate hitters. And we've seen that at times. Just got the bump to Double A. Love to see what he's going to do there. But this is a guy who I would say, to his credit and the Orioles' credit, kind of was not off the radar. I mean, we have draft reports on him going back to high school, but at the same time, a guy who was somewhat off the radar and has taken a step forward and has kind of put himself in that, you know, it's one of the best strikeout rates in the minors this year. And that's something that, you know, and I say that no matter how you do it, like we prefer strikeout percentage because that's your percentage of total plate appearances. Whereas strikeouts per nine, you could kind of, your strikeout percentage could be a little low, but if you're walking a ton of guys, you know, and just then striking out, you get more opportunities to strike guys out in that situation. So we like strikeout percentage. His strikeout percentage, but also his strikeouts per nine, which I think is above 14 last time I checked. A guy to kind of keep an eye on, especially, again, a guy who was a little bit lower profile coming into the year, but has kind of taken a step forward, and one to whether it's going to be long-term as a starter. He does have I think his PitchCom is going to need extra buttons considering how many pitches he laid out for us, but, or as a, you know, as a bat missing reliever, I think there's something to watch there. So that's our prospect soapboxes for today. A little longer today. These over the next 6 weeks probably will be a little bit longer because we're trying to cover 5 organizations a week, but we hope you do enjoy them. You know, and again, if you like this, you know, please subscribe, click the bell if you're on YouTube so you make sure that you get the notifications when we have a new one. And if you're on the podcast feed, we also love you on there, but please leave a review if you can. It helps other people find it. If you enjoyed this, there's so much over at baseballamerica.com. that we promise you will enjoy. Again, just things that we talked about today. Check out the Trey Gibson interview we did yesterday when we were recording this, or check out the StatCast standouts about Samuel Basayo, or Jeff has been rolling out like prospects who are kind of peaking, kind of standing out week after week after week. We have a new top 100 update coming up. We just updated the top 30s prospect rankings for all 30 organizations not that long ago. And oh yeah, by the way, that doesn't mention the fact that we are rolling out as you're listening to this. We've got new updated draft rankings coming out with reports on the top 500 prospects for this year's draft. By the way, we also rolled out our 2027 draft list update. So we, If you want to know about 27s, we've got you covered there, and 26s and 25s and international. And by the way, this week, we're also rolling out all of our college awards, having just finished up covering in Omaha. And we'll be looking ahead. You know, we've got our transfer portal rankings. So much I could keep going on forever, but the podcast would just take forever over at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.